Social distancing has been one of the clearest steps most of us have been practicing since COVID-19-related restrictions have been put in place. We've seen sporting events and concerts canceled, beaches closed, and signs and designations in the rare open places like supermarkets reminding us to stay 6 feet apart. But social distancing is easier for some than others, and not in the strictly physical sense. Some teens may feel it's riskier for them to practice social distancing than not, in more of a social status or reputational way. Pardis Madhavi is the Dean of Social Sciences in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at ASU, and she's with me to talk about that. Pardis, during the recent spring break in Miami, we saw a lot of young people getting too close together, considering COVID-19. Why is it that, as a general rule, young people take greater risks than people who've lived longer?
As you pointed out, you know, spring break was one of the first examples. But even after the stay-at-home orders did go into effect in many states, young people continued to have gatherings and parties to the extent that even some colleges and universities had to reprimand fraternities and sororities for hosting big parties. I think a lot of that has to do with how young people, and by young people, I'm really looking at the age group between 15 and 25, but how young people calculate risk. For many young people, when they calculate risk, how they weigh their risk, social risks can come into effect, and social risks can actually trump viral risks. So what I mean by that, for young people, part of their risk calculation has to do with what the most immediate threat is or what the most tangible threat is. So for many of them, as my research has shown, you know, the social risks, which involve reputational risks, so how people perceive them, how peers perceive them, those seem like very immediate threats and immediate risks. And so managing their reputations becomes paramount for them and can in some cases trump managing a virus like COVID-19 or even in my previous research, HIV, which seems like a far off possibility.
How much of it has to do with simply not having lived long enough to prioritize what happens? For example, if a teenager is having a very rough period and there's always the feeling of, well, don't worry, you'll get past this, it'll get better. And yet when you're in the midst of it, it doesn't feel that way. So when you're in the midst of these social challenges, you're thinking, oh, if I miss this particular date or this particular party, no one's going to like me for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's a component. But I also think that young people today, given the era of social media that we live in, they face a lot more risks than many of us faced when we were in those same age groups. You know, cyberbullying is very real and it's on the rise. And, you know, there have been many linkages made between cyberbullying and severe mental health effects. Suicide, depression amongst young people has been steadily going up, as many studies have documented. And so, you know, I think that these risks are growing. So there is some amount of it that is about perception, but it does feel that, you know, that cyberbullying and the intimidation that can go on through social media it is very profound, and it does weigh very heavy on young people today.
Well, so if I were to give you a balancing of the scales, do you see it as more peer pressure and less rebelling against authority?
Yeah, I think that peer pressure is a huge part of it. So, and I think that's the part that we don't take into consideration as often. I think we think of it as just rebellion. And certainly there is, you know, rebellion against authority and carving out your own identity is a huge part of that journey when you're of that age and, you know, even beyond that age. So I think that rebellion is a part of self-exploration. But I think the negative components of it come often from peer pressure. And, you know, just to kind of build from that, we also don't do a great job of messaging to people in these age groups. You know, many of our messages right now can be confusing, right? Our messages, you know, if you think about the parallels between COVID-19 and HIV/AIDS, and when HIV/AIDS first came about, the messaging was really that this is, and this was incredibly problematic, but the messaging was that this is a gay male disease, which is incredibly problematic, right? But again, it really affected how people calculated risk. If you think about COVID-19, the initial messaging was, of course, that people who are older are most at risk. However, here in Arizona, we know that actually the majority of COVID-19 cases are in the much younger age group. And in fact, we have our most recent numbers show that between the ages of 20 and 44, we have over 1,500 cases, which is double the number of cases we have in the age group of 55 to 64, right? It's far higher than any of the other age groups. So you know, we haven't been as careful and intentional about our messaging as we could have been.
One of the many press conferences Dr. Fauci was speaking and actually tried to direct it to young people and say, you know, you may not feel like you're going to get sick, but you may give it to someone else. You may give it to an older person, a grandparent that you love. Does that put more pressure in home on parents, on grandparents to talk with people?
I think it's absolutely right. I think that, you know, while some people are definitely, you know, hanging on Dr. Fauci's every word, you know, because this risk calculus has been made since, you know, the early days, you know, in the last couple of months, people have this image of what COVID-19 is. And so they're not necessarily keeping track of all the most recent recommendations. So that does put the onus on parents and grandparents to do a lot of the messaging. But then I think for us as educators, that puts a lot of pressure on us to think about how do we craft that messaging? We're already asking parents and grandparents and caregivers of all kind to do so much. We're already asking people to do homeschooling, you know, to try to figure out all these different, you know, I have three young kids myself at home. And, you know, while I'm a professor, I'm trying to go back to my elementary school geometry. You know, we already have so much pressure placed on parents and caregivers to add this without some guidance about, you know, how to do that messaging. I think what parents need to think about is that this isn't just something to roll our eyes at, and this isn't just kids will be kids, but rather we need to have a conversation with people, you know, with our young people about how risk is understood. And we need to speak to them kind of in their own language. Part of our job as educators and part of our job, you know, as community members is to help give that language, but we can't give that language when how we understand the calculus of risk is a bit missing.
Pardis Madhavi is Dean of Social Sciences in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at ASU.